Back, final hour of the program. Mark Ryan in for Doug Karsh. Devastated Doug Karsh. Absolutely devastated that MJF lost the AEW World Championship last night to Kenny Omega. He said as much yesterday. He said, you'll know where I stand, whether I'm in tomorrow or not, when I informed him that they were wrestling last night. Well, we know where he stands. Doug's a huge MJF guy, and it tells me he's out at least till Monday. We'll see. Mark Ryan's in with us. That's great. I got lots of texts coming in regarding the Tigers. This one's interesting. Does anyone believe the Tigers can play 600 ball for 3 months? If they had Aaron Judge and Shohei, maybe. But they have Veerling, McKinstry, Torque, and Carey. I can't hit lefties. Carpenter. Water will find its level, which is a 500 lineup at best. Harris failed to make this team by not finding a bat or two. Okay. To that, I say this. When you look at the Tigers and you're saying they play 600 ball, understand this is what the Tigers have done. Month of April, they were 14-13. May, they were 6-22, as I said before. God awful. 15-11 in June and 5-1 in July. That means this team is 34-25 in the 3 months that they, the three out of the 4 months that where they were a winning team. When they were God awful, went 6-22. Why were they god awful going 6-22? Well, it might be because they didn't have a center fielder because Baez and Parker were both Parker Meadows are both gone. It might be because their second baseman Gleyber Torres was not in the lineup, and it's obvious that they're a much better team with Gleyber in the lineup than not. They're a winning team. It might be because their starting rotation, which is awesome right now, got a total of five starts between Skubal, Mize, and Melton. And none of those was from Skubal. It just might have something to do with it that they were not exactly a full team in May. So now that they've gotten guys back, does this make more sense? Are they closer to this now? Do I think that they're this juggernaut of a team that has seen them go 20-12? Probably not. But I know damn sure they're not a 6-22 team.
And they're also going to get Gleyber Torres back. And guess what they do with Gleyber Torres? 4.7 runs a game. Guess what they do without Gleyber Torres? 3.1 runs a game. This is a team that has confounded. I'm so tired of hearing the water finding its level. Guess when else we heard that? The end of last year. Well, guess what? 2024, they go 31-11. Last year, they go 40-21 to start the year. They have had incredibly long stretches of great baseball, and sadly, they've had extended stretches of very poor baseball as well. In my sports watching existence, I have never seen a team that has this variance of personality. They are diagnosed with bipolar disorder. They are.
Well, and yet, all that matters is, okay, great, but did you get to the postseason? And the answer to that question over the last 2 years is
yes,
they did. Okay, what did you do in the postseason? Well, the first year you got in, nobody thought you were going to do anything, and they beat Houston in the first round, got past them, went against the Guardians in the next round, pushed them to five games and lost in a series that they could have won. They didn't win it, right? Last year, had no business making the playoffs because of how badly they played. They're probably going to be first-round fodder. Nope. They knocked out the Guardians in the first round and then took Seattle to a 15-inning game five where they ended up losing to the team that made it to the ALCS.
And not only that, but those who say, oh, they're nowhere close. Okay, well, transitive property, say what you will. They finished one run short of the Mariners, who finished one run short of the Blue Jays, who finished one run short of the Dodgers. So how far away were you exactly? And then we come back to the point. Mize, Melton, potentially Skubal in a playoff series. Maybe you trade Skubal. Okay, maybe you do. But the reality is suddenly your future's coming up roses. It looks like.
Yeah. The other part that bothers me about the text I just read is the part where he said, if they had Aaron Judge and Shohei, maybe, but they have Veerling, McKinstry, Torque, and Carey, I can't hit lefties, Carpenter. I'm sorry. If you're going to compare Aaron Judge and Shohei to players in the Tigers,
yeah,
how about you compare them to the best players on the Tigers, not the guys that are struggling?
And how about
they don't have, if they had Aaron Judge and Shohei, maybe, but instead they have, I don't know, say Riley Green and
Kevin McGonigal
and Dylan Dingler.
How many teams have three? How many teams have three players in their lineup in the All-Star game?
Yeah.
How bad is the lineup exactly?
Well, the lineup, to that point, the bottom half of the lineup isn't good.
Great.
And, you know, this is why they need to improve the roster, and they have room to. Like, there's no reason to be afraid to give up the bad for the good, let alone the good for the great. If you can find an upgrade, go do it. You can find an outfielder that hits lefties, go find one. You know, if you can find someone who's going to give you a better run at second base, go ahead and do it. Like or even first base for that matter. They've got the opportunity to do it as long as they keep winning. And if they keep winning, then the holes in their game become more and more obvious, and it becomes an easier target to go fix come the trade deadline.
By the way, historically speaking, do you know what the all-time record is for a team games under 500 to make the playoffs?
Well, how many teams have made it?
No. What's the all-time record most games under 500 at any point of the season for a team that made the playoffs?
I imagine it's probably close to 20.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
16.
Oh, is it 16?
Guess what the Tigers were this year?
Yeah.
They can tie the record. Tie the record for the most games under 500 for a team that ultimately came back and made the playoffs. And you're talking history here. But that's what this team has done. They've figured out what the most improbable outcome is, and then they do that thing.
So the Torres question to me is more intriguing than the Skubal question. I guess because I've made up my mind easily on the Skubal question. I'm trading him because I don't think you're re-signing him. And I think that the starting rotation can handle the load without Tarek Skubal. I think it's that good. Of course, it's better with him. But I think we can make some moves and make some other moves, and you're still moving on towards the playoffs without Tarek Skubal. That being said, this is why I think the Gleyber Torres question is more interesting. He's still rehabbing from the oblique injury he's got. Don't know when he's coming back, but it sounds like he's definitely making inroads to getting healthy again to rejoin this team. Maybe it comes shortly after the All-Star break. I don't know when it's going to come. These injury updates the Tigers give out are pretty vague. He says, he's completing rehab daily, or he's beginning a running routine or whatever. We don't know what that means in terms of how many games or how many days or how many weeks he's away. But monitoring that situation, as you mentioned, the team scores a run and a half more per game when Gleyber Torres is in the lineup than he is when he's out of the lineup. The Tigers' record is a winning record when he's in the lineup as opposed to when he is out. All you have to look at is May. And he wasn't the only factor, as I've mentioned before. There's a ton of guys that were factoring that. But Gleyber Torres, if he gets healthy and joins this team by, say, July 20th, right? 11 days from now. And he joins the team. That gives you, not even just under 2 weeks before the trade deadline. He's a free agent at the end of the season. I would argue that I would not trade Gleyber Torres, knowing he's a free agent at the end of the season.
Has more value to you.
Because he's got more value right now to me, and it's tangible with this team, to have him in the lineup, to have another bat that gets on base 40% of the time, which is ridiculous, but that's where he's at. His on-base percentage is like 400, 395, 400, somewhere in there. He's a good hitter, a solid fielder. Adding another player like that to the lineup that people talk about, you got all these guys, really, McKinstry and Torkelson. Well, if you add Gleyber Torres to the mix, that's one more guy that you can shift around, right? So you've got him at second base. It's not a whether you're choosing between Zach McKinstry and Colt Keith at second base. You've got Gleyber Torres there. So you can settle things down. Colt Keith is at third base. McGonigal's your shortstop. I've got things settled down here. Torkelson at first, Dingler at catcher, and you got your outfielders. Gleyber Torres makes sense for me for the Tigers to hang on to him. Now, it's different if the Tigers go in a tank again. If they truly are this Jekyll and Hyde team, and now they're going to go and lose six of the next eight games and find themselves out of it, all the goodwill is gone, then I would, of course, trade him. But if they continue to uptick, I don't think I'm moving a guy that's going to be a free agent at the end of the season in Gleyber Torres.
The last 12 games without Gleyber, the Tigers have produced 5.3 runs a game. Over the course of the entire season, that would rank second best in all of baseball. Now, we know the stats of what this team is with Gleyber Torres. You add him back to a team that is now producing offensively. Might this team really pop? That's what you've got to ask yourself. You know, it's I'm with you. What you would get back for Gleyber Torres doesn't merit moving him. when you consider what he's meant to your offense the entire season.
Yeah, and this doesn't mean that I'm not making trades. Again, if this team is good, if they continue to win and you get to the trade deadline, I'm adding to this team. I want to add a bullpen arm. We already talked about Mason Miller and what it would take to get Mason Miller if the Padres are willing to say we gotta make a change here because they're going in the tank right now. But they have to add bats. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a Shohei Ohtani or an Aaron Judge type. It could simply be a compliment as a right-handed hitter out, a right-handed hitting outfielder to Kerry Carpenter. What Kerry does against righties, find a guy that does that against lefties, and that might make a ton of difference to this team. Let alone if you could find somebody that's actually an everyday player and put him in the lineup. But you need to find another bat for sure.
Well, Byron Buxton has been the guy I've salivated over. And look, the reality is,
for years I have too, but he's never healthy.
He's not healthy. He's been more healthy, but the Twins are now in it again. That's the problem.
Well, literally, I think it was 3 days ago, we were doing the show and we were talking about different players. And I mentioned Byron Buxton's name was on a list of, hey, he could be traded, even though the Twins say they're not going to move him. They love to have him. And my criticism has always been of him that he can't stay healthy. And I love Byron Buxton. I love the fact that he is just smooth and glides across the field, plays a flawless outfield for them. And he hits for power. He's finding that power stroke. And he hits for average. And he steals base. He does everything. He's awesome. He just can't stay healthy. This is his 12th year in Major League Baseball. 3 times in his career, he's played more than 100 games. Oof. Not 140 games. 100 games. 3 times. That night, after the show.
Out again.
Here comes a tweet out. The Twins have placed Byron Buxton on the injured list with a hip issue. That's unfortunately who he is. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. Text coming in regarding the Tigers. The Tigers are an inconsistent team, which means they're not a good team. Well, they were bad, like historically bad in May. Outside of that, they haven't been inconsistent. We were outstanding in June.
It's unbelievable to me.
They were better than 500 in April.
It's unbelievable to me that everyone gives the Lions a pass for the injuries. When you look at the injured factor for the Tigers, do you realize they were number two on the injury index? They're still number two to the New York Mets. What have injuries done to the Mets season? And has anyone looked at them?
Yeah, they're terrible.
So why is it that nobody ever mentions the reason? We talk about the Tigers' injuries like they're an excuse. In life, there are reasons, there are excuses. You have the second most games missed to injury in Major League Baseball. It's a reason why you were scuffling. Boy, it just must be a coincidence that they're playing better now, right?
I understand that fans are upset with the Tigers because in the offseason they didn't add a bat. They didn't add a significant
bat. That's fair.
The one that they did was homegrown, Kevin McGonigal. And boy, has it been fantastic. Where would this team be without him? Well, we probably wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff right now if they didn't have McGonigal, who didn't have to play a day in AAA, made the jump from AA to the Tigers because of what he did in AA leading up to that point. And, of course, spring training, he looked like, okay, he's not going to be outmatched. He has an incredible eye at the plate. He doesn't swing at 79% of the pitches outside the zone. It's remarkable how good he is. But that's the addition. And it's a great addition, but that's not when you weren't counting on him being this good. Tiger fans wanted to get a bat. They wanted a Bregman type. You know, doesn't have, like I said, it's Bregman type. They wanted a big bat in addition, and the Tigers haven't provided that. The other thing that I think has fans upset with this team right now from a Scott Harris standpoint, and it's become an A.J. Hinch issue as well, is that the reluctance to go and find something better than, say, Jamai Jones. I cannot believe Jamai Jones is still on the roster. It's nothing against him. All right, he was amazing for this team last year in his role. You're going to hit against lefties. You're going to be our specialist. OPS well above 900 last year. Amazing. This year, yikes.
I've wondered if there's any sort of, just hear me out. I've wondered if there's any sort of passive aggressiveness in terms of, because I find it inexplicable that he continues to play him. So is A.J. Hinch being passive aggressive towards Scott Harris? Hey, this is what you're going to stick me with? All right, I'm going to put him in the most high leverage spots and he's going to fall on his face every single time. The Tigers have a 16.5% chance to win the division. They have a higher percentage chance to win the division than Jamai Jones does of getting a hit. You believe that?
Well, it's I to answer your question, no, I don't think it's passive aggressive against Scott Harris. I think these are moves that are made between the two of them. I think there might be some stubbornness by AJ Hinch, and he keeps looking at last year and saying, "We saw what he did last year. Why can't he be that?" And I'm amazed it's lasted this long. And I'm waiting to see, waiting for that tweet to come across from the Tigers PR department saying that Jamai Jones has been DFA'd and they have brought up Max Anderson, or they've brought up Chase Young, or whomever, Corey Jolks. Waiting to see today if anything shakes out with the Dylan Dingler situation. You know, but there's I understand why Tiger fans are upset when it comes to the lineup. And they didn't do enough in the offseason to add another piece to this team, to the everyday lineup. And I think the reluctance that Scott Harris has had is because, and he has said as much, they don't want to block guys when they get their chance. So the guys at the bottom end of this roster, they're either platoon players or maybe a legitimate guy who's playing every day but doesn't deserve to, like a Zach McKinstry type.
So I don't like the block excuse for this reason. You have to have offensive players who are producing. You can't wait for everybody. You can wait for some guys. You can wait for Colt Keith. But when two-thirds of your lineup are guys you're waiting on, and the rest of the team is ready to compete and win now, that leaves you wanting.
Yeah, so, and I get that. And I'd like to see them find, I think there are certainly players on this roster that they could say, okay, we've seen enough. And maybe it happens in this after the All-Star break. Maybe they say, okay, now we're ready to take a look at Max Anderson. We didn't want to before because he didn't show the discipline at the plate. He wasn't walking enough. Now he's walking at a reasonable rate. He's playing fine in the field. He's stinging the ball. Okay, maybe now it's an opportunity. And it may happen. Let's say, for instance, they do decide to trade Gleyber Torres. Well, if they trade Gleyber Torres, then you could promote Max Anderson. And then he plays every day at second base, and he's not blocked. Because I understand the theory of not wanting to bring a guy up to only be a platoon player, not bring a guy up to play one out of three games, you know, just for the righty-lefty matchup or whatever. I get that. And I get that you don't think that Max Clark is ready. Okay, I'll trust you on that. You know, it's not like Max Clark has an 890 OPS and, you know, and he's hitting 290. I mean, he's hit all right.
He's been okay.
He's been okay. Yeah. I mean, I think his OPS is like 760. Yeah. He's been good, but not great. And they still want him to learn a bit. But does that mean he won't see the light of day in the second half? Or, I mean, we're in the second half, but say after August? No, he might. He might. But that's why it's imperative this team does something in the next few weeks. Let us know. And I don't mean something from a Scott Harris standpoint. I mean something from a Tiger standpoint.
Sure. So where
come
is
in
the
all
lineup
guns blazing that you're still winning games, and you know if it becomes defined that the only reason you're winning games is because you have outstanding starting pitching, and because the top five guys in your batting order mm-hmm. get the job done, but the bottom four guys in the order are still atrocious. Give me another look at the bottom four guys in the order.
There's going to be in the next few weeks a bleep or get off the pot moment, right? And so for me, the line of demarcation has been: I need you to be within three games of a playoff berth on the 31st. On or before the 31st. You're within four now. I also said that if they fall to eight back and 10 days ago they were seven back, that you've lost the right to have any say on what happens. They're going to firmly sell. What is the line of demarcation for you? I said three games by the 31st of July. You got to be within three.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, I'm looking at really what they can do in the next couple weeks. And me, it's not even July 31st. It's okay. Are you still winning at this pace? Are you winning two out of three games? Are you taking a series? You know, is that what you're doing? Getting to that point. And I mean, they're four games out of the wild card now to make up one more game. Okay, if that happens, that could happen tonight. You
correct.
Know? So we'll watch and see where that's at. But I don't know if I necessarily have, it's hard to pin down a line of demarcation. I don't mean to avoid the question.
Well, sometimes
it's a question.
Feeling, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel whether you're in it or not.
Yeah, I mean it is a feel thing to kind of see where they're at, and if the I mean is the starting pitching are they above their skis there right now? Are they going well beyond what we ever expected? I mean, are we bound to see Troy Melton have a meltdown at one point? Casey Mize and you know Scooble. I mean, These guys have been incredible.
But the relief, incredible. The relief pitching has provided about as much relief as sandpaper does on a hemorrhoid. So your Mason Miller thing to me is incredibly interesting. And you and I both are on record. We'd move Max Clark to get him.
I would.
I would as well.
Tigers Data tweeted this out last night. Tigers starters over the last 12 games. Framber Valdez has pitched 11 innings, and his ERA over that time is 7.36. The rest of the starters have pitched 60 innings of baseball and have a 0.75 earned run average.
It's incredible.
That is unbelievable how good that they
have. And who's making the most money in that starting group? Again, which of those starters is making the most money?
Well, Skubal.
Oh, Framber.
Oh, is technically, I guess he
Framber's
is.
Framber's
right? Is he 35?
And who's pitching the worst
right, well,
of all of them?
Yeah.
Just saying.
I mean, yeah. When he's bad, he's bad. When he's good, he's great. And he needs to have more great starts than bad starts. John's in Clinton Township. Welcome to 97.1. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. I appreciate it. I am someone who has followed the Tigers and knows Tigers history for a long, long time. I can appreciate Tigers fans' frustrations with this team. I was at the Astros game a couple weeks ago on a Sunday afternoon, and I had to watch Jamai Jones and his 141 batting average. But when I told my dad about this, my frustration, he goes, there was a guy named Enos Cabell in the 70s. I'll spare you his stats. If you want to look up Baseball Reference, you can. He was absolutely awful. And for whatever reason, Sparky Anderson stuck with him. And Sparky was called the worst manager in baseball at that time. Now, of course, we all know Sparky Anderson, beloved in this town, retired his number. 3 total World Series, a legend in this town. I think Tigers fans need to relax just a little bit on some of this stuff. I understand the frustration. I think they will move on from Jamai Jones. As far as the line of demarcation, I think I'm with you, Mark. It's got to be 3 or 4 games by the deadline. Otherwise, I'm selling.
All right.
But,
well,
you know, it's one of those things that Tigers fans, we've been through similar things before. We'll be all right. I think this team is fun. It's entertaining. I'm enjoying the ride while it lasts. Who knows how long it'll last and how long it'll last with Skubal. But, yeah, that's just my take. I thought that was funny that we've been through similar situations with these Jamai Jones-type players.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I don't think it's funny when you bring up Enos Cabell, who was actually a pretty good baseball player. And it played 2 years with the Tigers. It was 1982 and 1983. In 1982, he hit .261 with a .608 OPS. Not that good. The next year, he hit .311 with the Tigers with a .769 OPS and was a 3.2 WAR player. Enos Cabell was a good player, and before he got to the Tigers, was with Houston. He was a good player. He wasn't a great player. He was a good player.
And it's never a good sign when you're talking about current players.
I should say he had some good years.
Right.
He wasn't god-awful like what we've seen with Jamai
Jones. We're talking about Jamai Jones like he's an illness. It's something you have to get over.
Well, I mean, the problem is he's a left-handed hitting specialist who's hitting .154 against lefties with a .506 OPS.
He's been special, all right.
Compared to last year, where the numbers are ridiculously stark in contrast, where he hit .288 against lefties with a .970 OPS last year. That's why A.J. Hinch is, I think, in my mind, why he's still looking at it, like, we're not that far removed from what you were at .970 on the OPS. Now, maybe analytics are telling him something. That is, he's hitting the ball hard. He's just having bad luck. I don't know. I can't explain it anymore. I just wish it was done. I thought this should have happened a month ago. It still hasn't happened. To your point about using him less, he's had 2 at-bats in July. That's it. They have used him less because Ben Malgiri has now replaced him in terms of the pecking order of need a right-handed bat. Here comes Ben Malgiri. Still have not heard an update on Dylan Dingler's hand. Again, last night, they took x-rays. They were negative. I think it's just a question of how bad is the swelling over the next couple of days? But with the All-Star break coming up, I think it gives them maybe a little more pause here. What do they do? Do they want to bring somebody up and give him a full rest of 10 days before he comes back to action? Or is this something that, the swelling can go away in the next couple of days and he's able to play, and he's too important to this team.
Yeah, that's
what
I think it is.
We're in a run right now. We got to have him as soon as he's ready to play.
You do not want to do anything to mess the mojo that this... Because the reality is, look, this whole thing could go sideways before the All-Star break. This whole thing could go sideways before the deadline. you got Philadelphia right before the All-Star break. I think this is the most critical time. You're just starting to get back a level of belief again that could be all lost. I mean, let's be honest. You could fall four games further back in the next week, and then you've blown all the goodwill that you've recreated.
248-539-9797 is the telephone number. But if it got to that point, there are two options the Tigers would have, catchers from Toledo. Tomas Nito and Eduardo Valencia. Valencia is hitting really well. He is one of their, I think, top 20 prospects anyway. He might be a top 10 prospect for the organization. And Nito is just a guy. But the difference is, and Valencia right now is an 839 OPS, hitting 267 with 16 home runs. He leads the Mud Hens with home runs of 16. But the difference is the trust in the catcher and handling a staff and what are you defensively. Tomas Nito is only hitting 248 with a 718 OPS. But from a source I've talked with who follows the minor leagues very, very, very closely, says that he is light years different. Miles ahead of Valencia when it comes to handling his staff and defensively. But Valencia is getting lots of reps at catcher to get better and better and better, but clearly is the better hitter. There's no question he's a better hitter.
And we've already seen Nito up.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if that's a move that happens, but it also wouldn't surprise me in the second half of the season that if you had a chance to bring somebody up, that Valencia gets that opportunity to come up. I think he's on the 40-man roster, so we'll see what happens. The best case scenario is they just come out today and say, yeah, the swelling's gone down considerably. It looks like we'll give them the day off and maybe tomorrow off, and we'll have them for the weekend, Dylan Dingler, and have some time to rest in the All-Star break, or maybe they give them the rest until the All-Star break, and he returns to action next week. And hopefully it doesn't hurt the Tigers' chances of winning. Look, Jake Rogers was great last night. It's interesting. When we talk on the show, this seems to happen a lot. I don't know if this happens to you when you do shows. But when Doug and I get critical about a player, we say, look, this guy's got to step it up because we're just not seeing a whole lot. Invariably, that player ends up having a game. We talked about Jake Rogers yesterday a little bit. And a caller had brought up Spencer Torkelson and talked about him. And he just doesn't come up with enough big hits or whatever. And both guys end up with home runs. Torka, three-run bomb. Jake Rogers hit the two-run bomb. Then Rogers followed up with a base hit, drew a walk, had a game after Dingler had to leave with a hand injury.
I actually believe Jake Rogers might top the list of players in this city most unfairly criticized. He is, his intangible value
there is
that
intangible
fans
value.
Can't see is actually off the charts. Managing of the staff, tips to the pitchers, etc., keeping the train on the tracks. Sometimes I think fans get blinded by the tangible, which is why they're interested in Kevin Durant, and they miss the intangibles completely. And I think Jake Rogers gives you a lot of that. Most unfairly criticized athlete in this city.
That's an interesting take. I don't know if I'd go that far with it. I think that he's undervalued because of what he means to the staff and because he is a better defensive catcher, although I haven't looked at defensive metrics this year to see where he really is. But he is also what he is. He's a backup catcher. Dude's only played in 28 games this year.
Yeah.
Right? He only played in 46 games last year. He's no longer asked to carry the share of the lion's share of games at catcher for this team because Dylan Dingler has emerged. But Jake's average has dropped considerably every year. 221 in 2023. Down to 197 the next year. Last year was at 187. This year he's at 160. It's not going in the right direction. But he has a game like he had last night, and you're reminded, okay, this guy is just a part-time player now. He's literally just the backup catcher. When they want to give Dylan Dingler a break, here he is. And Dylan Dingler doesn't get breaks anymore. He gets a break by playing DH.
And guess what? He actually has memorable hits, unlike somebody else who's hitting 160. Jemai Jones. And oh, by the way, do you remember what Jake Rogers did in 23?
Well, I have the numbers in front of me.
21 home runs.
Yeah. Yeah, but hit 221.
Right.
But that and that was coming off the year we hit 239 the previous year. His average has literally dropped every year outside from his rookie season. We had 112 at-bats. But look, I'm not here to pan Jake Rogers because I think he has a role on this team. My point on bringing it up is that if Dingler's out, which route do you go? Do you go the route, okay, now I've got Jake Rogers, who is this guy that handles the staff.
Which route would you go? I would go Valencia.
I'd go Valencia, too, even though people told me it would be Nito. So we'll see what ends up happening, that if anything ends up happening on that. Just interesting how that works. The Tigers are a bad team beating up on teams missing their best players, some of which weren't great with them. They've been on a hot streak, which will end soon, and they're still 8 games under .500. All we're going to have at the end of the year is Skubal, Mize, and Torres leaving for nothing. Okay, to that I would say this. Why do you ignore what happened to the Tigers in May? Everybody that brings up this argument, oh, they beat up the teams and teams didn't have their best players. I'm sorry, did I miss the month of May where the Tigers were without all these players? Where I keep mentioning they had, you take out three arms in a rotation. Skubal, Mize, Milton. Are they pretty good pitchers right now? Yeah. You take them out because they only had five combined starts in the month of May. Five.
We've got here also an inferiority complex about quite a bit. Why is it that there is this mandate that you have to trade a free agent? Because, boy, if anyone has an option to leave Detroit, they're going to take it. I don't know why you can't have designs on keeping Casey Mize, on keeping Gleyber Torres. Mize isn't going to have the that Tarek Skubal is going to?
I think 100% they're bringing back Casey Mize. I don't think there's any doubt the Tigers are. They're not going to trade Casey Mize. I saw his name on a list of, he was in the top 10 of tradable players at the deadline. And this was like an ESPN list. I'm looking at this going, really? I mean, I get it. He's a free agent at the end of the year, and the Tigers aren't playing well. At the, you know, at least the record doesn't show it. The Tigers aren't playing well. That's the problem, is they actually are. The record doesn't show it, but the record's getting better and better by the day. So he's on this list, and I'm thinking, there's no way in hell I'm looking to trade Casey Mize. I'm looking to sign Casey Mize. I'm looking to give him a 6-year, you know, $130 million contract or more. Because I don't think he's a $40 million a year pitcher. I don't think he's getting that in the free agent market. I think you can go ahead and have that conversation with him.
He's a guy that you can build around.
Right. Do you want to be
here? He is affordable.
Exactly. And if you know for sure that you're going to lose Skubal, I sure as hell want to lock up Casey Mize.
I'm much less likely to move off
price.
Of him. Right.
It's going to be half the price.
And then you're thinking about the rotation next year, right? Yeah. You need a couple of vets in that rotation to blend well with the young guys.
Now, Torres is an interesting thought. We talked about it before. I'm not sure what you do with Gleyber Torres. My inclination is I'd hang on to him because I think his team's going to keep winning. And I think if Torres is healthy in 10 days, if he's back on his team in 10 days and you get him for a couple weeks prior to the trade deadline, if you're in the right direction, I kind of want to keep going that direction with Gleyber Torres. Because I'm not sure what Gleyber Torres is going to get you at the trade market, as he's been injured a few times during the season and he's a rental. I don't think you're going to get some stud player. I mean, you're certainly not going to get a stud, but are you going to get a decent bullpen arm for him at the deadline? I'm not sure you'd get that.
So, no, you're not going to get, you're going to get minor leaguers for Gleyber Torres, and you're going to be getting second-tier minor leaguers for him.
It's become obvious that the road to the Tigers' success this season begins and ends in their division. They need to win series within their division, period. That's Bob and Shelby. Well, that certainly helps. I mean, now that they're only... What did we say? 5.5 games behind the division leaders? 5.5 games behind Chicago White Sox right now in the division. Yeah, take care of business in the division and you'll be on top of the division. The American League is poor this year with win-loss records. This team is 4 games out of a wild card spot.
And every time you look up, it's different and it's better. You know, you were double-digit games out in the division. You look up, it's better. Guys, look, I understand everyone wanted to say they're out of it. You were wrong. All of you who said they're cooked, they're done, you were wrong. They're back in it right now.
Well, they're back in it right now. Now, things could certainly change. And if they do, then everybody that says they're just, you know, this wildly inconsistent team that is not a good team, then you'd win the argument. In 2 weeks, if you find out that this team loses, you know, 15 of the next 20 games, if they lose 12 of the next 18 games, they go, you know, 6-12, then yeah, you've got a great argument that says forget it. And then, you know what? We're all going to say the same thing. Pack up and sell. And at least it happens, you know, that before the trade deadline, and you've got players to move on. But I think this team is way more in line of the team that we've seen over the last 5 weeks compared to what we saw in the month of May.
And the big question was, you know, did you fall too far behind? Or, you know, is there too much ground to overcome? I think at this point, the answer is unequivocally no.
I mean, they've got a lot of digging to do, and then they've already done a lot of the heavy lifting, but they have to keep going, and they have to prove it. I mean, they can stay on the heater. Nothing says you can't stay on the heater. I don't expect them to stay on the heater like what they're on right now, but I expect them to play well above 500 baseball the rest of the way because I think they're healthy. And that's when you're healthy, this is what we see out of them. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. Still no update on what's going on with the Tigers with Dylan Dingler, if anything. I mean, I imagine it's just going to be something. It's monitored, see what the swelling is at, and hopefully it's a situation they don't have to bring somebody up and don't have to put them on the 10-day IL. If the x-rays were negative, I think that's a good sign, but it's about swelling in the hand and how quickly it goes down. Can Jake Rogers handle the load for the next couple of the games? Hopefully that's the case, but we'll have an update. Normally we say on the show, there'll be an update at 2 o'clock.
That's how it goes?
That's how it typically goes.
You pray as a host to have the breaking news in your show.
We've had plenty of breaking news in our show over the last few weeks and certainly 20 years, but a lot of times it happens that way. The Pistons have reportedly made a move to sign guard Elijah Harkless to a two-way contract. He's a player from the Utah Jazz who played in 26 games last year.
Can you wake me up when there's something to be excited about there?
Yeah.
Please.
They keep adding to it. Look, this is a question you have to ask yourself if you're a Pistons fan. I'll ask the question in a second. Let me just finish the thought here. So Harkless has been added. He's a guard, 6'3 guard, ball handler type, averaged 7 points a game in 21 minutes last year in 26 games played, right? Not much. He's a bench player at best. It goes along the lines of what Trajan Langdon said they were going to do, add ball handlers and shooters. And I brought this up because the Pistons are scheduled to begin summer league action today. And I'm excited to watch to see Okorie play and to see the second round player they got. Was it Onyenso?
You're close. You're close.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. Do you like how I let you make that attempt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. If I'm close, that's good. But I've always liked watching some summer league action because this is likely the most minutes they're going to get. Although with Okorie, you don't know. Because there's a lot
he could earn
there's
a role
lot of upside with him.
What this team needs, he could earn a role. But you're right. If you want to forecast what he could do with significant minutes, this is going to be your best opportunity.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just I don't put a ton of stake into it, but I do like to watch it. That being said, the question you have to ask yourself about the Pistons as they're not, I don't know if they're done making moves or not. I'm anticipating we're going to hear any minute that or any day that they've come to terms on a long-term extension for Jalen Duren, and then we'll move on from there. But if the last move to be made in this offseason is Jalen Duren, ask yourself this one question. Are they better now than what they were in Game 7 against Cleveland?
Better in terms of...
Are they a better team?
Are they more diversely skilled? Yes. Are they better relative to their competition? Absolutely not.
Well, that's a question that has to play out. And because that's a tough part of it, right?
You've gone from 60 wins to 40s.
Oh, you were thinking of 40s. Interesting. I think the landscape of the Eastern Conference is wildly competitive. Obviously, the Knicks won it, which I still... I'm shocked that they won it, but they did. They slayed dragons to get there. We don't know where LeBron's going. If he ends up in Cleveland, well, Cleveland's real formidable, you know, because then they'll have another threat offensively.
Miami Philadelphia.
With Giannis, Philadelphia with Jaylen
Indiana
Brown.
Bouncing back.
Indiana's got their guy coming back.
Zubac.
Atlanta is
dangerous.
A much improved basketball team. You saw what Orlando did last year. They damn near knocked the Pistons.
You're sixth in the East, as you are right now.
I don't know if they're sixth or not, but the point is, it's wildly competitive. But are the Pistons better than what they were last year? That's the first part. The second part is legit, what you're asking. Relative to the rest of the conference, have they improved enough? Probably not. is there a move that could be made in this offseason that would put them over the edge and say, oh, yep, they're right there in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference? Nobody thought this was a team that was in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference last year, and yet they were. They were the number one seed. But is it a bad thing for them to be, say, saving some money for the trade deadline next year as opposed to going out and finding that player right now?
You have to be close enough at the trade deadline next year to make it worth everyone's while. But, I mean, I would say maybe the roster at the end of last year was a 7.1. I think maybe now the roster is a 7.3 or a 7.4. The problem is there are five or six teams above that 7.4 right now with what they've done and with what they've added. And that is the issue. Other teams have made sizable moves. Philadelphia adding Jaylen Brown and Giannis Antetokounmpo changing hands. And Donovan Mitchell gets the big extension yesterday. So I don't think that Trajan Langdon is going to stand pat, but I also know that fans are going to be restless with a capital R if they don't add that second scoring option. Among the topics that we're all tired about, it's Cade getting a Robin, right? How many different ways can we have that same conversation? But undoubtedly, it's something we're all aware of as a clear need for this team. Do you think they can afford to wait until February to add a second scoring option?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I do, because I think this is a winning basketball team, and then you certainly add some juice when the trade deadline's in February or whenever it is next year, by going and getting a player at that point in time. And there'll be more players on the market at the trade deadline than there are right now in the summer, for sure. Teams will find themselves out of it, and they're willing to dump salary, whatever the case
is. You ever seen a losing team cling to more players than the Pelicans do? Everyone they have is untradeable, and yet they win, 26 games?
No, I mean, they made their mistake when they drafted Zion Williamson in the first place, but that's a whole other that's a whole other issue.
Right.
Banking on a guy who literally blew out the shoe and his first trip up a court. I mean, you knew things were going wrong when that happens. Rico joins us in studio from the Mike and Rico Show. What's going on?
Yeah, I remember he did that while he was at Duke.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw him play that first game. Like, what just happened to his shoe?
And you know what he's done on the first of never? Stepped away from the buffet line.
Oh. He never wanted to be there. Honestly, I think in a parallel world, he goes to New York. He actually cares about basketball. He stays in shape. You saw the second that whoever the New Orleans teams was at the time got the pick. He was just like, F this. You got to trade.
You have a say. You can do what Steve Francis did.
He didn't, and he, ever since he's been there, nothing. You could tell. Some days he feels like working. Some days he doesn't.
What's coming up on the show this afternoon?
Some days it looks like Steve knows what he's doing. Some days it looks like he doesn't.
What's today?
Today, he does not. Like in the commercial for Liberty, he did not. He spelled the insurance right. He did not.
He did not. I do love that reaction. But at least he spelled insurance right, right?
He did not.
He did not.
Definitely did not.
He did not.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the ask for Larkin that Steve wanted, and just kind of, I don't think he's being serious. I think it's all full spite store.
All right. Look forward to that coming up next here on 97.1.